I'm going to be repeating those, that WhatsApp instruction in a very short time. But every Thursday around about this time, we cross over to our Deutsche Welle correspondents in Bonn, Germany, giving us news and views from inside Europe. Today, we're joined by Helen Sini in Bonn, Germany. Helen, how are you doing this morning?
I'm pretty good, and I'm still digesting that WhatsApp tip. I'll have to try it out later.
I'll send you the instructions. We're starting out in Russia. Russia has been carrying out massive military exercises at numerous locations involving, you know, a 200,000 troops, vast numbers of planes and helicopters. Is this simply war games, drills, or is something untoward up here?
Well, they're only drills at the moment, but I mean, these war games, they've been on an unprecedented scale, Lester. In fact, they're believed to be the largest military exercises on NATO's eastern flank since the end of the Cold War. Now, they're called Zapad, and they take place every 4 years, and they're jointly carried out with the armed forces of Belarus. They kicked off earlier this month, they end today, but this past week has been the so-called hot phase. And the two countries have been rehearsing a scenario where a supposedly imaginary Western coalition, which of course is widely seen as NATO, is working to unseat power in Belarus. And these war games have an important political perspective to them, because Belarus has been in the news for months because its authoritarian president, Alexander Lukashenko, has brutally cracked down on the country's opposition, which has resulted in sanctions by the West. And in recent months, Lukashenko has become quite reliant on support, financial and otherwise, from Moscow. In fact, he met Putin last week for 6 hours of talks about closer integration between the two countries. And then on Sunday, Lukashenko attended these military exercises and announced that Belarus planned to buy $1 billion worth of weapons from Russia by 2025. So these deepening ties between Belarus and Russia are very significant. And from a military perspective, of course, these war games have been an unprecedented show of strength right on NATO's eastern border, involving, as you said, 200,000 personnel, 80 planes and helicopters, and nearly 300 tanks, Lester.
This must be seen as some form of provocation, particularly for Western European governments and also the broader NATO alliance.
Oh, absolutely. Neighboring countries have been very concerned about these war games. In fact, the president of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky, said that all-out war with Russia was a possibility. I mean, Russia, as you know, seized the Crimean Peninsula from Ukraine back in 2014, and Moscow backs pro-Russian separatists in the east of Ukraine. Other countries in the region, like Poland and the Baltic states, are also very unsettled by these military exercises. In fact, for the first time since the fall of communism in 1989, Poland had declared a state of emergency on its eastern border, in part due to these exercises. Now, Poland and the Baltic states are part of NATO, and NATO officials have warned that, you know, these drills increase the risk of an accident or a miscalculation that could spark a crisis. And the alliance has accused Russia in the past of underreporting troop movements. Russia has denied any lack of transparency with these drills. It says it voluntarily disclosed extensive information about them. But NATO's Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said the alliance has to reckon with a more assertive Russia and remain vigilant, Lester.
And finally, it is then these war games that they come on the eve of parliamentary elections in Russia. Is this mean to shore up some support for Vladimir Putin?
You mean the war games?
Yes.
I think the war the war games were planned anyway. Perhaps it's just a coincidence that the parliamentary elections, which also would have been planned long in advance, they start tomorrow and they end on Sunday. And voters will be electing a new parliament, the Duma. I mean, it's pretty safe to assume that Putin's United Russia Party will be the overall winner because, I mean, the opposition's been pretty much stifled in Russia. There's been an unprecedented crackdown on them over the past few months. Many critics have been blocked from standing as candidates. Some have actually been forced to leave the country after threats of prosecution. And Alexei Navalny, who's the most well-known opposition leader in Russia, he's been in jail since January on fraud charges, which were widely seen in the West as politically motivated. And Navalny's political organization, which the Kremlin claimed was extremist, has been dismantled. I mean, these elections are quite important for Putin because the new Duma that's elected will be in place in 2024. And that's when his current term as president expires. So that means he'll then have to decide on running for re-election or choosing some other strategy to stay in power. But having said that the opposition has been stifled, I mean, there could still be a few surprises in these elections because there's growing dissatisfaction in Russia with economic problems, such as growing inflation, as well as environmental problems and so on. And opinion polls suggest that voter turnout could be quite low. And some Kremlin observers believe that, you know, this unprecedented crackdown on the opposition reveals that that Putin is feeling a bit vulnerable. But at the end of the day, his approval rating is still around 60%. So presumably he doesn't have too much to worry about, Lester.
Helen Seney joins me again next week here on The Morning Review just after 11. Thanks so much for joining us here. I hope you stay well.